I talk to my officers all the time. We talk about BPR, best possible resolutions, which should go beyond the pale of tickets and arrests. Right here in your district. 10-year-old kid shoplifting at one of these convenience marts with gas. Of course, owner calls it in. Go through the routine. I'm going to unfortunately sign this kid up for another juvenile intake with the DA's office, an office that can barely survive the intake they have. She says, put that on hold for a minute. I'd like to try something. She contacts the kid's parent, happens to be the dad. Says, hey, with your influence, we don't have to write this up and handle this like we normally would. Would you and your son, would your son be willing to enter into an agreement whereby after school, he picks up some trash around the property, does some sweeping of the steps, you know, real basic stuff for an hour or so? The dad said, absolutely, we would definitely do that. Did it for a couple weeks. The merchant was happy. The dad's happy that his kid isn't referred to juvenile intake. And the kid learned something about taking responsibility for your actions and who your victim is. And that you have to make that victim whole. Those are BPRs that I'm encouraging all of our sergeants to facilitate across the board. That's where we're hoping to make some inroads on all these disparities, where we can look at those kinds of things. Question, yes, ma'am.
I'm new to Madison. I'm very encouraged by what you said about working with MMSD, mental health. I noticed you had a press conference about policing tactics as well a few weeks ago, I believe. Violence and policing tactics.
Violence and I did what?
You and the sheriff and several other people.
Report. That was the Dane County Task Force on use of force.
That's what it was. Use of force.
Yeah, they told me I had 2 minutes. I'd expect that from my own people, not you.
So I'm encouraged by what I'm seeing in Madison, and in the very same breath, you're speaking to some very hard realities about, especially around budget issues. And those aren't realities that we can solve in this room tonight, especially a room of mostly white people. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering what you feel community members can bring, what it is that we can offload so that officers can focus on things only officers can do. Mm-hmm. I know there's not a volunteer program that's really up and running. Officer Wilson is looking at that. What do you see there as an opportunity?
Well, again, I think that when I've talked to Dr. Rose, with all these same issues that seem to be so pervasive, where does one start? Dr. Rose, as the president of 100 Black Men, said, Chief, if there's one thing and one thing alone that I can wish for our kids of color and their future. It goes to everything. To crime, to economics, to everything. We need to teach our kids to read at grade level. That gives everybody at least a competitive start on life. And when we have more dropouts than Milwaukee, as a kid, I would poke fun at the country of Milwaukee. Now I can't. Proportionally speaking, they're doing a better job than are we. So 100 Black Men is having a press conference next week, as a matter of fact, where we can all sign up to do more. I know there's a number of our cops and civilians that are looking to, in terms of mentoring in the schools between school hours, Monday through Friday, just an hour or two to try to get us more situated with mentoring and helping kids read. And I think it's the very grassroots stuff like that. It doesn't seem real sexy or grandiose, but when I'm told by practitioners that to them makes all the difference in the world. I have, you know, I can't live that life experience, so I'm going to take it on good authority that there's something there. And I do think we can all do something in that regard in terms of our mentoring. Madison has a lot of, I always call it, acts of drive-by altruism. I have a group that says, kids are getting ready for school. Let's give them backpacks. Then we'll, next time we'll hear from somebody is, it's Thanksgiving. We have to have a community meal. Now it's Thanksgiving. Let's do Christmas presents for the needy. You see what I'm saying? A lot of episodic pseudo-events, but no day-to-day, week-to-week risk-taking. That's what I think our community just needs more. We've got a lot of great hearts, very generous souls, and they're all doing what they perceive to do well, even if it means writing a check. But we need, besides the check writers, we need to have so many of these groups coordinate and sustain the efforts. Where one lets off, the other one can begin, so we can compensate for those gaps. But I agree with you, and we have to do more too. What we're doing in terms of the kids' interaction is that obviously we have a K through 5 sort of opportunity to pair with MMSD to talk about values, good decision making, avoiding those temptations, and then we have the ERO, the Education Resource Officers, 9 through 12. But quite frankly, there's that gulf, that gap, and I know the Alder is working on it, right? Middle school, and he's a teacher, so he can speak with authenticity. The middle school kids, are they not impressionable?
Yes.
Very much. And I almost think that we're missing our opportunity, because at high school, it's literally almost too late. The friendships have been established. The habits have sort of come on board. And it's as they're sort of shifting and wondering, family, peers, going here, going there. Middle school, we have to do more, which is why we did get a grant. We're starting 3 in July, and we'll start another 3 in the fall after recruits come. And we're going to have this core group of officers. We're going to be doing much more outreach with specifically targeting a middle school population. Is that, that's our hope. Yes, ma'am.
In regards to the previous conversation about the 2.5-hour trip,
I'm half deaf from being on the range too long.
In regard to the trip the officers had to take for 2.5 hours each way, is there something in the works where they perhaps have something here in Madison or something closer, or is there something that
just tried it in Mendota and they said no?
Well, and again, your point is well taken. Milwaukee County is the number one user of the mental health services, and they have their own dedicated hospital treatment facility for Milwaukee. But if you then look at the sheer largesse of the numbers, Dane County is like second. And so that's why we're urging, why can't we reopen Mendota? They have decided as a matter of administrative expediency to dedicate all of Mendota to its forensic patients and then all of Winnebago to the emergency detention civil commitments. But the problem is that Winnebago's at or flowing past capacity too. So you're going to have to move some of these folks somewhere in order to be humane about it. So I'm just curious. I would have loved us, and maybe they'll decide by morning after we lick our wounds on the loss. Maybe it'll be worth looking at an appeal. But at the end of the day, I don't hold great promise for that. I really wish someone would just win the Powerball and make us a treatment facility right here in Madison. I would really love that, because I think that would be helpful. Yes, sir.
Yeah, follow up a bit on the lot of drug issues.
Sure.
Here. I don't know how they're taking in the drugs, but it reminds me of a bit of a potential problem. In, you know, this poor community in Indiana had a lot of that kind of drugs, and now they've got HIV issues there. Are the kinds of activities occurring within drugs here, the kinds of activities that could start an epidemic, an HIV epidemic here? They're shooting up, trading needles, and those kinds of things. Or are we past that, or that kind of? problems.
I don't know that we've, and I wish Janelle was here from Public Health because she could speak much more passionately and expertly on that. My sense is because we have a lot of opportunities for legitimate, safe needle exchange, that we have not seen that element as much. There's a number of outlets where people can exchange those without question or without asking. But your point is on the heroin stuff is that we're getting seeing most of ours come up from Chicago routinely. It's about $150 an ounce, so it's a very good price point. What it does do to us, to our neighborhoods, is we're getting hammered on theft from autos and residential burglaries. And it's the sign of stuff that they don't literally bring up a moving van for. It's the quick, portable, bartable, cashable, pawnable stuff that has street value and it gets them to that mecca of 150. So I think if we could incidentally get a handle on our addictions, we could also see a drop in some of those portable crimes. But now, okay, you know I'm gonna take you all to task. The thefts from autos. Come on, folks. 90% of your cars are unlocked. Give us a break here. We need some help. Right? In our burglary crimes unit, we have a new burglary crimes detective unit. And I like the progress that they have made, if for no other reason that they're fundamentally going to contact each and every victim and at least let them know about the solvability factors of what's going on or what can't go on. We asked them to be proactive, and I told you over the course of two afternoon weekends, they literally were instructed, you contact all of those homes in and about the west side that have the garage door wide open and no one seemingly acting as a guardian. No one's mowing the lawn or watching the kid. It just sort of seems open. 4 hours, 100 neighborhood. 100 neighbors contacted in 4 hours. 100 homes. So there are things that we can do that isn't great rocket science that can help at least give us a measure. But like I say, I was hoping that you were going to put like your number five to the number one. When I got the call last week, that the citizen called in real time, seeing the suspicious activity at the neighbor, and then, you know, the guys that run for a living, like Adam, when these guys run, they usually get their man, and boy, oh boy, when I saw the foot impressions left on the door and the foot impressions that were taken at others, I think we got a good one for that one. But now, you know, again, until the next time. By the way, right now, you guys are sort of living the charmed life. Right now, it seems to be the north side that's getting hit with all the bad stuff right now.
Could you give a brief update for session, especially if you see any changes coming on the use of the test unit for traffic law enforcement?
Yeah, that unit has had a full-time day position as well as a PM's unit, which is not at full strength because of other staffing considerations. They generally have one test member that's assigned to all the district, but then over the course of the week, they identify those areas that they're getting calls on, or we like to distribute those resources from district to district to those hot spots, which are coming up a lot of times from citizens on our hotline and things. So I just saw, Randy, didn't we just get a report today where they were out at a couple places last week? Their statistics remain very strong. What also kind of pleases me with all due respect is that I like seeing, you know, okay, 40 tickets were written over the course of 2 hours, but I also like when I see 40 or 50 warnings. I don't want to be caught up in sort of the mindset that we're anywhere near a Ferguson and we're reliant on that as a revenue enhancement source. If those officers are doing their due diligence, they've run their record, and someone is worthy of a warning and an otherwise good record, give them a warning. Make it a teachable moment. It's not always about the ticket at the end of the day, but it is about the presence and about doing something in those hours of operation. Yes, Dave.
Chief, you know that I'm a proactive individual who believes in grassroots efforts.
There's going to be a but here.
No. I'm asking you to provide the people in this room with what can we do as citizens, and there's probably a lot of different directions you can go on answering this, but what can we do to make it clearer to the elected officials, the mayor, the state legislature, whoever it needs to be, to make sure that the district attorneys don't return the bad guys to the streets by plea bargaining them down to next to nothing, slapping them on the wrist, having your officers be frustrated because they see them out there the next week. You can't do all of it in terms of arguing these issues. How can we organize as a group of individuals to do a better job of lobbying, if you will, both our state legislature and our local county and city governments to see that we have a problem in the DA's office that is perpetuating your people doing the same thing over and over again with the same people, and we see the results of that in our neighborhoods in terms of break-ins, in terms of drug overdoses, drug sales. You know, I could go on for a long time, but I just wonder if you see a role for all of us to play, and how can we organize to help you to get that job done?
Well, for me, most of politics is frankly local first and foremost. I would like to sort of start micro and work macro. First of all, as we go back to our neighborhoods tonight, and I'm gonna, Dave, you know how I feel about it, Steve. We can be doing more as neighbors and as guardians to one another and to our block. I'm not saying, although Steve is one who grew Midvale Heights from 18 to over 400 plus, 500 plus. I mean, it's wonderful that people are getting interested in how they can help one another, even in their small radius of West Madison, to make everybody's quality of life issues better. It means, yeah, that we take in the mail from one another, that we don't think twice about necessarily knocking on someone's door when the paper isn't, where the paper's delivered and they're normally picked up by now. We need to be that brother's keeper a lot more than what we've been. We've sort of all gone off in our own little directions as literally the detached Americans that we used to see depicted back in the 60s with that Kitty Genovese story, where everybody saw the problem and nobody called and nobody lifted a finger and nobody did anything. It's okay to say hello, and where do you live? I live over there. Dog walkers are great. They're always out and about, and they're chatty, and they have their coffee. Maybe everybody has to get a dog. All I know is that, as a cop, I never checked a burglar at a barking dog inside. But what I'm saying is that we started being neighborly, maybe being a little more affirmative for those who are inclined to try to do some sort of an operation where we have at least a network of information that's free-flowing about what's trending. A lot of you belong to listservs. I think that's wonderful in terms of staying topical about what the issues are. I'm sure that alders, as they get ready to go into the budgetary process, are sort of curious, where do your priorities lie? They get that from constituents. I think that is your prerogative. And I'm not telling you to flood the ballot box about the NPD. I'm suggesting, this is a very personal thing that I have pitched to you, Ty, to all of you tonight. Each and every person is going to have to know, what is it that, from my quality of life and the needs of my family and my block or my community, what am I pitching? It may not be that police are right at the top of your list. It may be that you're going to say, whatever the schools need, get it for them. That's your prerogative, and I'm not directing that. In terms of the DA's office, my gosh, I think I could give the speech for Ish if he were here. He'll tell you that they have not seen any increase in authorized strength since 1983, and in fact, it's diminished. And meanwhile, the county continues to grow and grow and grow. So they're basically triaging. And so now they're probably, I would only guess, but if they're asked, okay, violent criminal who did a personal crime against another versus a serial burglar. Burglars are bad. They're recognized as felonies in our state. And not only do they take stuff, but they intrude upon the privacy and the sanctity of your homes, which is also very violative. But they're going to skew towards a person's crime versus a property crime in triaging those things. So they need more resources. As a matter of fact, Chief Gaber and I sit on the steering committee for the Dane County Task Force. We have a vote. We literally took money that we had. Now, of course, asset forfeitures are going completely along the wayside, but before they had, we literally said, we will pay the DA for one position for 3 years with the money we were using from our drug unit, from the proceeds, because we thought it was important enough. So those are excellent suggestions, and I think, for quite frankly, we're singing to the choir here, because the fact that you're here on a Monday with 3 to 6 inches of snow, God, coming, the fact that you're here and you're interested and you're engaged speaks volumes for your level of civic attentiveness. I just wish we could bring others along with you. Quite frankly, it's great to see the usual friends and acquaintances, but we need to bring this gospel to others. Well, back. Hey.
Chief, I was wondering if you could enlighten me about the policy of obtaining search warrants.
Sure.
A year and a half ago, my neighbor on the left side got, or on the east side rather, got burglarized, and she was out of town. And it was a sunny morning in June, I believe it was, and I noticed their gate was open, and I guess on the other side of their house, a rocket got thrown through the window, and they gained access to the bedroom window and ransacked the house and everything.
Sure.
And, my neighbor and I also put in the same call about a few minutes apart about this burglary, and they came within 5 minutes and brought the dogs and everything. Well, the dogs led them right down to the greenway and through the greenway up to Hammersley, I believe, and then they stopped because they had no search warrant. I don't understand why they, what is the policy about that?
Well, and again, you have a pretend attorney and someone who actually could practice if he wanted to. So I will try to open the door, and he'll probably close it with a great deal of authority. For us to be able to secure a search warrant, first of all, we have to be lawfully present in a place where we can be. So if it's a house that's the object of that search warrant, we basically, without having someone to give us consent to enter, we have to seal the house, meaning no one gets in, no one gets out, and then we have to basically draft a warrant that says that based on specific and articulable facts, we believe, to the extent that there's probable cause to believe that there are seizable items contrary to their possession in said named home. And then it has to get proofed, and then we get it signed off by a judge, and then once we have that, then we can, with force if needed, we can enter that domicile, that residence, in order to conduct a search. What do you think if we were moving fast and everything was clicking, how long would you guesstimate that would take to establish?
It's between 2 and 5 hours probably to do that, to find a judge, to actually get it signed, to get a search warrant done.
So, and the fact is that a dog sniff may give us probable cause to believe that the person or persons who may have been involved in that recently committed crime, they may have a unique aura or scent associated with them. But the nexus is can we prove that there's probable cause that they're in that home and in there now? Sometimes the dog literally will scent to the street and we know that they were picked up by a getaway car because the dog sort of just goes around in circles at a certain point. So there's a lot of legal acumen that's involved with that. Yes.
I had the impression over several years that some of the other agencies besides the police have been pulling their people off of the streets and making them more bound to spend more of their time at the office, basically rather than being on the streets. And then is that the case? That is, some of them, it seems to me, that you're doing the tasks.
We don't
sometimes
want to be at depolicing.
But in some cases, it sounds as though some of the things that you're proposing to do and are doing belong in other agencies who should be putting people on the street. I mean, is that a fair assessment of what might be going on with the agencies?
I see where you're going. I would say it's a fair assessment to say that each and every cop shop has unto itself a unique culture. Some of those cultures are long-standing in tradition and very difficult, if not immovable, objects. And just because you're the new kid on the block with a couple of sewn-on stars doesn't mean that they're going to do anything differently for you. An example, and I don't say this as an example of being pejorative, but just as an example of culture, I was recruiting back in the good days for the City of Madison Police Department, and I was attending a job fair in early April, UW-Milwaukee, sorry about that. In any event, I'm going into the student union, and I noticed my colleagues from the City of Milwaukee Police Department. Now, it was 90 degrees, and sort of like you, they were dressed in boots, spit, and polish, and their faces were just streaming with sweat, and so I couldn't, you know, I've got the short sleeve shirt on. Dude, different weather station than I'm listening to? And they looked at me with a sense of incredible amazement and said, well, we didn't get the memo yet. I said, what are you talking about? We can only take off the long sleeve shirts when the memo comes out from the chief that says we can wear a short sleeve shirt. What about you? He said, oh, I don't know. I thought it was going to be hot today, so I made the profound decision to wear short sleeves to this event. There are cultures that entrenched, and it's really difficult to move the Titanic on a dime. And we're lucky. Chief Cooper has been and always will be a mentor for me. I don't necessarily agree, step in cadence with everything he's been proclaiming recently about some of the use of force issues that we're going to agree to disagree on. But be that as it may, he took a culture which was predominantly white male post-Vietnam with not a premium placed on extended education. And owing to his initial baby steps, what we now have is a department that has the average age is 29. An MPD officer typically comes with a bachelor's degree. 20% of them come in with a master's degree. Our community is 18% people of color. The department's 20%. We have 8.5% African American. The department has over 10%. Where do I need more? Hmong and Latino. The national average for women, federal, state, county, local, municipal, corrections, 12%. Madison's at 31%. I got an offer today to go to San Diego to talk about it. So it depends on what month. So the point of the matter is that cultures are something that you really have to roll up your sleeves to work on. And then there are subcultures even within those cultures. So for example, I think for those who have heard me on the circuit, there's a difference between working days and 3 to 11 and working 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. Having worked 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. for 4 years, I can guarantee that after midnight, victim, witness, suspect, complainant, passerby, just about everybody's drunk or high. Sadly. And, you know, I came in with a fairly decent working vocabulary. And Karen Corcoran, one of our dog handlers, she was out on Allied Drive with me once, and I was dealing with a landlord-tenant dispute. And I got done, and I had these people sort of looking at me, and Karen translated, he said this. I said, okay, fine. So, but on nights, when you're used to using polysyllabic words, and now it's your night six after six consecutive nights, six on, three off, and you're going to detox for the third time, it tends to be, you come, sit, no! There's not a lot of conversation going on because you feel like I've said this, I feel like I'm talking to myself all the way to Southtown. And again, I don't mean to be cruel, but I'm saying that I can see where the culture of nights is something that even I have to be worried about for my officers. Because if you spend, if you're a phenomenal, exceptional person, grounded and balanced with outside interests, you can probably withstand the Knights culture. But if you don't have a lot of positive outlets of positive connection and seeing the gauntlet of the human condition in all of its beauty, seriously, if all you see are those that are the saddest or the maddest or the baddest for 6 days in a row, you can get real tunnel vision, and you need to have either your coworkers or your people in your real world outside of Copland have the capacity and the courage to challenge you and say, you're changing and I don't like what I see. You need to go to another shift. And I was blessed that conversation came to me from my wife, Jane. And we've been there for 32 years, and when I leave here, I'll look at my wallet, I'll look at my phone, and if she says, get Woodman's and do it now, I will be stopping at Woodman's before I dare come home. There's a certain chain of command that exists in my household that I understand all too well. Other questions that we might have here? Yes, ma'am.
I'm interested in hearing you comment on the issues of the homeless population.
Sure.
I know that's an enormous subject, but I don't know what to ask.
Well, here's where we can have some encouragement, and I might ask for an assist from my friend Alder. Matt, if I screw this up, let me know.
Okay.
One of the things that the city is hoping, is that we have looked at models like in Philadelphia, owing to the, and you can Google the phenomena called housing first. And roughly what that phenomena is that if you get people housing first and foremost, no questions asked with very little strings attached, just get them out of the elements and let them know the stability of that roof over their head. Then, over time, hopefully, they will be amenable to their AODA issues. They will be amenable to those issues that relate to job performance and preparedness. They will be amenable to perhaps exploring and getting a GED. But according to those precepts, it has to start with unconditionality in giving the housing at the outset. And I think the mayor's fairly committed to that, if I'm not mistaken. And the problem is that we have a lack of housing units to launch. I think we have some units coming available this spring on Rethke as a beginning, but it's still nowhere near dealing with sort of the amounts of people that need it, particularly families. As we track sort of our incidents with homelessness, particularly in the downtown Isthmus area, we're finding most of our chronic calls, quite frankly, are probably dealing with 24 folks who, for whatever reason, in spite of street intervention, outreach, and other services or offers to provide same, have made a sort of a deliberate choice of sorts, not a good one, that they don't want to be serviced or they're ignoring or neglecting themselves to that extent. And that's where I think where we've created a little bit of some help is that when we had everybody sort of at the city county building on the front steps there, or the front porch as it was sort of euphemistically, that began to grow and grow and grow. And I think what it becomes sort of a philosophical question is it better to have 40 to 50 people all in one spot and sort of the relationships and the complexities and the impatience that arises, which usually translates into a lot of calls, or is it better to have five groups of five sort of scattered? And we have seen a diminishment in calls for service by virtue of trying to get people connected to social services outlets, but we still have a paucity of housing units and we still have to have people that want to be motivated or urged to go. Now I know that there are some in the community who have said that the MPD is unwittingly making homelessness a crime, to which I have to say unabashedly no. I must vigorously disagree with that supposition. The few instances where we have to hold people accountable and responsible, and quite frankly, 98%+ of the times the police take formal enforcement action, it's because a third party has called 911. We literally have to, I don't want to admit this on the camera, turn the cameras on. I literally think that we stumble across more crime by accident. So when we're getting all these third party complainants, we get there, yes, they are both trying to beat the snot out of one another. We can see that. We have to hold them responsible. Well, we're first of all trying to find some mechanism other than ticketing, but at some point, after you separate, isolate, try to get them some services, and they're still back at it an hour later, you have to do something. So we're not trying to charge them even with crimes at the outset. We were doing a lot of forfeitures to avoid criminal records. Well, now the ones that have been the most chronic that we've asked the city attorney to look at, helping us help this malaise of downtown, are literally the person that had the least amount of fines on that top 10 list I saw had at least $3,000 worth of outstanding tickets. One was up to 20. So it's not like we're looking to throw people in jail, but we are looking to disrupt the cycle of spiraling violence that has occurred in that small hamlet of Troubadours. What's concerning though is like this morning when I came in, I think I saw 7 people in and around State, the corridor by the Veterans Museum, just literally sleeping on the sidewalks or in doorways. We had that spate of 2 nice days, and now we're going to get some snow. So again, it's concerning, and the homelessness issue is concerning. Yes.
Landlord-tenant issues.
Okay.
Seems to be a notion that a lot of the problems the police contacts are always originated around troubled areas in the city. Mm-hmm. Is there more that can be done with landlords and or tenants?
Well, maybe you can speak to this because I know you've done some clinics on this, have you not? Well, Mike, I know you have too.
Yeah, we've had a lot of landlord trainings, and you guys have attended a couple of them at the West District. I think the landlord part of it is probably easier to get at because you've got a smaller group. 5-10 years ago, we instituted the chronic nuisance premises ordinance, and during that process, there's a lot of other things that were discussed, like licensing and permits to be a landlord and. Those things I think appropriately were vetted out, and we ended up with the nuisance premises ordinance. Would it be nice if we had a magic wand and could just prevent people that are poor, absentee, irresponsible landlords from doing that? Yes, it would make our life easier.
We actually do have sort of a magic wand. It's called the city attorney's office. I think they just shut down, 96 properties?
But if you look at property management is all the difference between.
Is there such a thing as tenant education that would help on that side too?
I most sincerely believe so, yes.
Yeah, it's certainly tougher to get at because you've got a much bigger pool and you've got a much wider range of behavior that is impacting the quality of life of their neighbors. It would be nice. It's hard to get at because you've got so many other things in the mix in terms of behavior, mental health, alcohol and drug issues, all that stuff sort of flows into.
Are the majority of your calls police associated with that sort of an arrangement with landlord tenant of your contacts?
That's a good question. I can't say for sure. I'd have to look at it to see whether a majority is actually involving people in a rental property. My guess is no, but I'd have to look at it. Just because so much of what we do is outside of a residential context, businesses or accidents on the street or public areas.
I'll tell you one place you don't want to find yourself on any given day of the year. You do not want to be downtown on August 15th. That is Armageddon. All the leases are up at the same time, and it's this domino effect, and if somebody doesn't get out in time, tempers are flared, sofas get thrown out, it's incredible. We have to put these forklifts out in the city. Actually, if you just close your eyes, somebody's trash is another person's treasure. It all sort of mysteriously goes to another person's home, but it's weird. August 15th is a terrible day to be downtown. Other questions, please. Oh, sir. Hi.
Apologize for coming in.
No worries.
You put coffee with a cop. How's that going?
Oh, Vic had mentioned that earlier. It's going well. It's going well in the West. It's
going well?
Yeah, so we're just a couple weeks into it. We've had a good turnout every time, and our plan is every Thursday at 9 a.m. we're going to have someone there. So we hope to continue it.
I haven't developed the sophistication, so I just have Kickstart with Steve instead. That's enough.
That's enough.
Other questions for you folks? Or yes?
I'd like to do some shameless advertising.
Oh, good.
I am with the Westside Senior Coalition, and we have started serving lunches here on Tuesdays and Thursdays. They're nutritious and low cost, and even if it's not something that you personally would take advantage of, we'd appreciate it if you could kind of get the word out in the Meadowood neighborhood to let you know that there are lunches being served here Tuesday, Thursday, low cost, nutritious, and
so just as we have a chance to kind of finish things now. By the way, hi Coach, how are you? We've had an awful lot of conversations going back to last spring about people are concerned about where is Madison relative to sort of gang activity. And owing to some federal definitions of what constitutes a gang, but also in light of the fact that some of those have more historical value and are tracked and traced versus what is actually happening, is that we have a gang officer assigned to each and every district. And just so you understand sort of their mission, their first mission is to be relational. Have them become the mentors that perhaps some have lacked. And when you develop those sort of relationships of at least some trust, then as you see the kids sort of careening towards some bad or attractive nuisances, you try to do your best to move towards prevention, getting them some constructive encounters or activities. I say that because I'm looking at Coach Assad, and I know he's done basketball and football tournaments, and he's got him gardening, he's got him crossing, doing a lot of good stuff back there, Coach. Thank you. But we want our cops, our gang officers, to be doing that. At some point, when it really looks like it's caroming out of bounds, try to get some sort of an intervention in a very benign way where there doesn't necessarily have to be unrest. Might be just getting that kid to a different guardian or a different place or different face for a few weeks, right? Then the summit of where things have really sort of, as you see, we're spiraling, then there may be those instances, as we saw last spring, where there's a suppression element to the gang officers. You know, we identified 10 different folks involved in gangs and gang-related activities and crimes. So it was all hands on deck, and for 3 days, multi-agency and everybody in the MPD sort of put our habeas corpus out for these 10 individuals. Now, the gang officers, owing to their knowledge and networking, were probably responsible, help me on this, 2/3 of them, 6 out of the 9, at least. They know these kids, they know their cars, they know their gangs, they know their girlfriends are their boy. It's just, they're like living with savants. It's kind of scary, like so-and-so, I'm like, please just tell me who we need to get. I don't want to hear their entire life story. But they know their life stories. And then even at the point that these gang officers were arresting these young men, on the way into jail, they're already starting again at the relationship building, because they know that the next seminal point that their job is going to be involved is reentry. Because no one's going to throw away the key anymore. So you already have to start building for when they come out. And we have to know what we can do to better equip them to avoid this in the future. When I got called into that Westtown Mall shooting it was about a year ago this time, wasn't it? Because it was state wrestling tournaments. State wrestling tournaments It was Westtown, wasn't it, Adam? It was about 6 o'clock on a Saturday night, and shots fired like the OK Corral out in the parking lot. It was literally incredible. No one was hurt or injured as a result of that. That many rounds were fired by these gang members. And then, of course, we sort of saw the encore performance later that night on Russet. Well, when I got to the command post at the West District by midnight that night, all the gang officers were there, and three of them literally looked like you had just run over their pet puppy. I'm like, guys, I know this is bad, but aren't you taking this a little over the edge? And they said, Chief, you don't get it. The kid, the young man that was shot tonight, we had him in the win column. I said, what do you mean you had him in the win column? I said, he was in a very dysfunctional family, getting into a lot of mischief. Court-ordered supervention and intervention. He got placed in foster care at shelter on the east side. What happened next? Grades are going up. Second team all-conference football player. Has some D3s and D2 schools calling and looking at interest at this kid. Bringing it back together, then what happens? Court-ordered intervention is over, he's returned to his mom. Mom hasn't moved forward. So now, he's backslipping, backsliding, and you know the rest of the story. Old neighborhood, old haunts, old habits, and leads to tragic results. So they thought for sure that in our line of work, you savor those wins wherever you can gain them. And that's why they were so racked with grief. Obviously very concerned that a young man was struck multiple rounds, but moreover, that they thought that this was one that had turned a corner. And so what you're seeing and what we see here in the streets is very symptomatic of a lot of broken programs, whether it be education, whatever the case may be, is that kids aren't inclined to do bad things. Kids are inclined to do desperate, impulsive, stupid things for their peers. And that's where we have to have more mentors and more interventions. But cops can't do it alone. No way. I can't ever broker that check. I will never be able to sign it. We need your help. We need the community's help. We need the not-for-profits, and we need the other government agencies. The best we can hope for is to sort of maintain and try to get some kids sort of corrected and readapted, but the numbers are more. I'd say that from the gang unit's intelligence, those who are actively living the life are probably closer to 200. I know you've seen numbers in the thousands owing to the chronicled, documentable federal guidelines, but we're probably dealing with a core group of 200 that give us major concerns or pause. And as you saw last spring, when 9 out of the 10th, and the 10th, as you know, of course, of our bias, we believe that the 10th, who did the Topper's Pizza shooting in the broad daylight in that strip mall on Mineral Point, our supposition that he's also good for the Brathaus shooting the night before, probably proof, but in any event, got him for one, but he fled to Chicago, and then we put out an interstate warrant, and he was picked up and ultimately extradited back to Madison. But that summer, last summer, folks, talk about the 95-5 rule. Once those folks were put on ice or sentenced or put on monitoring, we had a relatively quiet summer. So it is what it is. Other questions? Yes, ma'am.
Are they located throughout the city?
Yes. They're not indigenous to, you know, I feel like, part of me, you know, I'm old enough to remember West Side Story. There's no Jets and Sharks.
Okay.
And we're not competing for turf or territory. It's very transient, very mobile, very multiracial. And there's those who are bona fides and there's who are posers, who want to be, who think it's cool and it's a survival mechanism. So, interestingly enough, we can't necessarily all, you know, assuming that the wardrobe or the tats mean that they're in a gang, I think you got to be a little bit careful about that. Yeah. Coach.
I want to just ask the audience. So you utilize, you're saying both by speed, getting out of the parking lot, you the same speed coming back in the community, trying to serve some of these kids. So I want to make sure that the narrative isn't out there that every black, brown, or poor white kid, Asian, or Native American, is somehow a gang member because the parents are off the bus, they have some tattoos. They might be hungry. They might have bad parenting. And that might be the desperation that the chief spoke of. So as much as we want to engage with some sort of a judgmental dynamic, understand where you were when you were youth, understand the structure and the comfort zone that you came from, then rationalize what somebody with no level of support, what they're going to think, how they're going to act, what are they going to do. Every child is in a gang member in Madison or anywhere else in the city.
And appreciate
it's very important that we start coming back into our community to serve instead of that.
Thanks, Coach. Floyd, my mentor, Dr. Floyd Rose, and he says, Chief, is it any wonder we have a problem in our schools? It's hard to learn, but it's a lot harder to live. Unless you've walked a mile in those shoes and do not know where the next meal or the next pillow is awaiting, or whether you'll have a change of clothes, or whether this will be an opportunity to get a shower, or, and he describes a litany of things, you realize that what you're speaking to is very real. Thanks, Coach. Well, if there's no more questions, I will just conclude by saying again, we really appreciate the fact that the West Side Police District, first of all, I appreciate what you're doing, Captain Wall, and your progeny here, your command staff. But more importantly, this is speaking volumes to us about how much this community does care, that we do want to reclaim that which is lost, and we want to continue to make inroads on it. The fact that you would spend 2 hours with us on a Monday night with all the other options you have is really quite endearing. So I thank you very much.